Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Big Sam's off then. Moyes has his passport ready and a reality check for Spurs fans as they return home. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's the 20th of May. I'm Jules Freak.
I'm Addy Russell.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome along to the Football Ramble this Thursday. How you doing, Andy? How you doing, Jim?
Yeah, good. I like the image of David Moyes with his passport. I mean, he'd have his passport anyway because he'd be going on holiday, wouldn't he, if he's like, you know.
Well, I don't know. He might not. He really enjoyed helping out in the community over the lockdown, didn't he? So maybe he won't.
Yeah, maybe.
Get back into that.
Maybe.
I'd be packing my suitcase. Same. I'm desperate for a holiday. I'm not going to lie.
Me too.
I want to get some sunshine. I want the sun to scald my skin, literally. Yeah.
David Moyes looks like he shares that sentiment.
Yeah. I'd just like to see the sun.
Yeah, same. How are you, Jim? You had your little vaccine yesterday.
Jab.
I'm very jealous.
So I got a sore arm to go.
Never thought
sore
I'd
ribs.
Say I was jealous of someone getting jabbed in the arm, but I am.
We're through the looking glass now, aren't we? We live in opposite land. Yeah, so it's good. I feel very pro Bill Gates, weirdly, which I wasn't expecting.
How does it compare to your usual dead arm that you get from Jules?
It's not that bad.
Right, okay.
Thing is, though, is they say that you're meant to be a little bit drowsy the next day, feeling a little bit out of it. So this could be fun for the next half hour or so.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be that different than usual, to be honest.
It's like, oh no, I accidentally resigned from West Brom while I was under the effects.
But you've done something quite exciting this week as well as the jab. It's been a big week for Jim Campbell, back doing some comedy this week as well.
Yeah, that was fun. So that was good. I mean, you know, was it good? I mean, I don't know if it was good, but I did some. Oh, I was rusty. But it's just nice to get back out there.
I have faith in you, Jim. I'm sure those 30 people in the crowd loved it.
Yeah, that's all that we're allowed in.
Better than nothing, though, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Feels like we're getting back to normal, seeing fans in the stadiums this week.
That's been so good. That has been so much nicer than I was prepared for. Because when you know the fans are coming back in, but it's only a limited number,
you kind of
caveat that, don't you, in your own head, and you kind of adjust your expectation. But it's amazing the amount of noise that even a small, like seemingly small amount of people can make.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean,
it's been so good.
I went to the first game with fans at Plough Lane on Tuesday night, and even though that was a friendly, it was amazing to finally get people in there, because whereas going to Plough Lane for the first time for the first game there, it felt emotional. The fact is that when the whistle goes and the game starts, it's still just a game with no fans.
Yeah,
and like that adrenaline and that feeling of your match day routine, I suppose, it all like dissipates quite quickly when the whistle goes and you go, "Oi, I'm rare." And all that sort of stuff. So it was pretty special. The bit that got me this week, actually, was after Chelsea beat Leicester, and when Chelsea went at home and they play One Step Beyond by Madness, you could just hear the fans going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And, you know, I've not got a particular connection with Chelsea. I've got mates who support them and stuff. But, you know, at that moment, I thought, yes, this is great. Yeah. Come on.
My moment was, I mean, you knew I was going to mention this at some point.
Yeah,
it's taken me, 3.5 minutes to get there. Tuesday, you're lucky it took me that long. Tuesday night, going back to the Amex with fans. And I have been super lucky as a football fan this season to go to the Amex when there haven't been any fans there and be able to watch the team play live. But to go there with 8,000 other fans on Tuesday night and actually hear the crowd, I know we beat Man City, so genuinely the atmosphere was incredible.
Yeah.
But it did sound like the stadium was full. And the difference between, I think, going to the Amex on Tuesday night and having been at the FA Cup final on Saturday, where there was more fans, but in a bigger stadium, and the way they kind of spaced them out at Wembley, they were kind of clumped together. Whereas at the Amex, they kind of spread everyone out, which meant that the noise sort of bellowed through the whole of the arena. And it just felt... It honestly felt amazing. But there was one moment where I actually sat there and I chuckled to myself because I thought, this is what we've missed. You cannot replicate this with fake crowd noise. You can replicate cheering goals. You can replicate all of that kind of stuff. But when Cancelo got sent off and all the Brighton fans were pointing and going, cheerio, cheerio, cheerio. You cannot replicate that. That is what we have missed about football, is just all of that kind of stuff, as well as the cheering of the goals and, you know, cheering every tackle, every block. It was absolutely incredible. It was amazing to be back, and I loved every minute of it.
I mean, even Kieran Tierney being made the pantomime villain at Palace was, I think that's something players have probably forgotten about. If every touch is booed and every sort of misplaced pass is celebrated by the opposition, like, it's meant to be like, it's meant to be a bit gladiatorial, you know, and it's great to have that back.
It has been so good. And last night, 6 more matches where we saw home fans at the stadiums. We'll try and get through as many of the games as possible. Let's start off with the Hawthorns, though, where West Brom lost 3-1 against West Ham. And the big news kind of coming out of this game was Big Sam's announcement at the end of the match that he is indeed going to be leaving
West Brom. Didn't see that coming.
After the final game of the season, did you see that coming, Jim?
Yeah. I think we all saw that coming, didn't we? It still counts as a relegation on his CV, doesn't it? I think that has to be clarified.
Like, you do realise, Big Sam, that this does mean you've still been relegated, because you were relegated before you decided you were leaving.
It's absolutely amazing. All that stuff about being like him being his own man is incredible to me. It's like, I mean, is it purely ego driven then? Like, if you just want to come in and like save a club and then walk off into the sunset and go, yep, see, I told you I could do it. It's like the clubs themselves don't actually matter to him. And because he said in the statement that if he'd stayed on and got them up, they'd only have wanted him to stay on for another year. It's like, oh, it's unbelievable. He's quitting because in his head, he skipped ahead to getting them promoted already. Like, and he can't be bothered to try and keep them up a second time. Like, it's unbelievable. And West Brom deserve better than that. And like, if he left the oven on and burned his house down, he would blame the people that built the house and the materials they used. Like, it's just astonishing. It's astonishing to me. And he had all that stuff as well about saying that, you know, he's a short-term guy. You know, they wanted long-term. He's a short-term guy. And even said in the BBC post-match interview, it's like, well, you know, that's what you lot say about me, isn't it? I'm a short-term guy. So on the one hand, he's accusing the media of saying this thing about them. And then he's saying that actually it's true that he is a short-term guy. But in March 2018, when he was at Everton, he said, I know all about Everton and what you have to achieve. I want it to be a long-term appointment.
God,
so something's not right there, Sam, is it? It's almost like it's all about protecting your ego.
The thing is, it's the way he phrased it, isn't it? He said, I'm not long-term and they want long-term. As you said, that's not me. And I haven't been able to get Skepta out of my head since then. He's like, I'm not going to act like a waste man. Come on. He's like, you know, I used to wear a West Brom tracksuit, put it all in the bin, because that's not me.
Yeah, you know what?
You can just see him like trashing it on the way out, yeah. Can't you? Right, well, get me suit back on now.
Yeah.
Get me, get some Rihanna on.
What makes me laugh as well is that he has to leave with his sort of, like you say, his ego in check and his head held high by kind of coming out with quotes like, it's very generous and I feel very flattered that they wanted me to stay. Not to worry, they've asked me who the successor should be, and yeah, I'm happy to offer my opinion on who that could be.
Yeah, he also said as well, didn't he, along those lines that, like, you know, it's for the good of the club for him to leave and someone else to come in. And it's like, it's just his manner. I mean,
that's kind of indisputable given the results, isn't it?
And a 16% win percentage at West Brom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, I think he would have expected a bit more in the January transfer window. Yeah. And I said at the time, I felt this transfer market was kind of set up for him because we think of him as someone who can go out there and get players. And because if there's no money, like the sort of deals that you used to pull off at Bolton in terms of left field signings, loans, short-term contracts, that for me seemed built for this market. But
yeah,
I don't know. Did he not get the influence, or did he simply not get involved? Did he simply say, bring me the players? And it never really happened. But, you know, the squad never really looked good enough. He didn't make it much better. There was no miracle.
No. I mean, you know, a lot's been made of the fact that he did get them playing better towards the end of their time, which, you know,
when it was
counts
done,
something, but
basically
it was just wasn't quite enough, was it?
Mm. What next for Big Sam then? Are we going to see him as a pundit on the Euros?
Probably, actually, yeah.
Jimmy, your face God. Then. Dreaded it.
Just won't go away, will he?
What club could we see him going to next? Do you think he will wait for another short-term situation?
Be interesting, actually, this, won't it? Because, yeah, I mean, he has built this reputation not unreasonably before this as someone who was the guy to go to if you really, really needed to get yourself out of a scrape. And will another club take that chance now that he's not got West Brom out of this scrape in the future? I would imagine they probably will. It's so difficult to say who it'll be because it could be anyone, really. It depends who's in trouble. It's going to be anyone below 15th at any given time,
see,
basically.
What I am hearing from you is Palace when their next manager doesn't work out.
Oh, God.
Halfway through next season.
No. Could happen.
We'll return to Palace.
Yeah. Well, we'll come on to Palace in a bit because they lost against Arsenal last night. Before that, though, just a quick one on West Ham. Look, David Moyes, I mean, he continues to do it, doesn't he? Getting a win at West Brom last night means they've all but secured themselves a place in Europe for next season, which is phenomenal as an achievement. I know we've been waxing lyrical about it this entire season, but they're literally just behind the finish line now.
Yeah, and I mean, last season, let's make no bones about it, they nearly went down.
Yeah,
they were in a lot of trouble. And he's, what a job he's done. It's an absolutely brilliant turnaround. I love as well, in the post-match, he was saying, I really wanted the Champions League, but, you know, if we can get Europe, I'll, you know, absolutely take that all day long. And they've deserved it. They've been brilliant. Be interesting to see what the atmosphere is like at the London Stadium when everyone gets back in there, because obviously it's been a bit of a problem. But now, what a crest of a wave to ride. If there was ever a time to like reset that atmosphere, it's now. So that's it could work so well in their favour.
That's kind of what went wrong for them at the beginning of them getting in the London Stadium, wasn't it? That it was meant to be heralded with European football, and then they got knocked out in the qualifying rounds by Aston. Yeah. And if they'd have had some, you know, European moments, you know, some great night matches in that first season at the London Stadium, okay, it's not Upton Park, but I think maybe West Ham fans would have been a little bit more sympathetic
to it.
Yeah,
of course.
Because, you know, when you think about a stadium, and I was talking about Wimbledon fans getting in the stadium, for example, for the first time this week, it's about being in a new stadium is one thing. Making it home requires some moments, requires memorable moments, memorable nights. And until you get to that point, it never feels like home. Now, I understand for a lot of West Ham fans, it will never feel like Upton Park. And I totally understand and accept that. But it can kind of...
It takes time, doesn't it?
It would have taken the edge off it. Imagine if they'd have had a couple of big European games in that first season. Mm. And if they can come back and have that, and without being patronising to West Ham, it's going to be very hard. But Europa League is a lot better for them.
Yeah.
Because if they qualify for the Champions League, they're struggling against relegation next season. I think they haven't got the squad to deal with it. But Europa League, I think they can do a really good job in.
And David Moyes was asked about the Europa Conference League last night as well. And to be fair to him, he was like, look, no one knows what this competition is going to be. It's the first year we're doing it. So you can't really knock it until you've tried it, Andy. And for West Ham, of all of the teams that are sort of gunning for those Europa League places, does it suit them the best?
Maybe, but they're still going to get in the Europa League. Yeah. So it's going to be down to someone else who's going to absolutely despise it.
It's Everton, Spurs and Arsenal in the race to not finish seventh. It's really interesting. Like, we've joked about that before on the show, like the idea of having a particular position you have to avoid, but that appears
a
to
random
be the
position.
Attitude from all... Exactly, yeah.
And amazing.
It appears to be what's going to happen.
You and I were talking about this earlier, Jim. If you look at the players, say that Arsenal have developed in the Europa League. Emile Smith-Rowe is one of those. And look at the group games that Harry Kane got in the Europa League for Spurs. That was really the platform for him getting into the Spurs first team and forcing his way into the Premier League team. So I just think it's a matter of looking at it the right way around and seeing what you can get out of it rather than like really complaining what you're stuck with. I look forward to you finishing seventh, basically on Sunday. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's bad for happen.
That win for Arsenal, 3-1 at Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park, was Roy Hodgson's final home game in charge of the club. And it was brutal from Arsenal. Where did that come from, Jim?
You know, we're
heartless.
We're on the road to the Conference League, Jules, and nothing can stop it.
Scoring in the 91st and 95th minute, stealing a victory from the jaws of defeat. Poor old Roy. Thought he was going to get something in his final home game.
He looked properly gutted by it as well, didn't it? It seemed to genuinely undermine his farewell. Which
gave the people
shame.
What they wanted.
So I mean, Arsenal, wasn't it?
Very.
They want to see his sad face, though, don't they?
Yeah, I want Arsenal to be bastards, to be honest. We've been too nice, so I'm all for this.
Is it because of the old school strip, do you think?
Well, actually, I like that they're playing in lemon yellow.
It feels
appropriate. It's like a sort of kit version of nominative determinism. You're going to play like lemons, you're going to look like them. But yeah, no, it was actually really satisfying win that, to see, you know, beautiful ball from Ødegaard.
How horrible Jim is. Satisfied at upsetting Roy Hodgson after his 45-year managerial career.
Well,
managing,
you know,
16 teams, eight countries I think he's managing or something.
He's the best Premier League manager Palace have had, isn't he? Like, basically, he's got the best record any manager has had there in the Premier League. And I don't think us winning late on changes that. So get over it, Roy.
There was a fan outside Selhurst Park last night with a banner saying thank you to Roy Hodgson in five different languages that he speaks. It's cute, isn't it?
That's nice.
I didn't know he spoke five languages, old Roy.
Yeah, he's a regular Brassel.
Yeah. That.
That's great, being known as the Football Rambles Roy Hodgson. I'm going to enjoy that. Thanks.
Well, look, Roy does have the chance on his final game in charge of Crystal Palace to actually knock Liverpool out of the Champions League places, because they got into the Champions League places last night after their 3-0 win at Turf Moor over Burnley. They currently sit fourth. Leicester have dropped to fifth. This is going right down to
the wire.
And Roy could have a say in whether his former team plays Champions League next year.
Wouldn't that be a twist? That would be a twist.
Yeah. I don't think he's the sort of person that would take any sort of joy in the schadenfreude of Liverpool missing out. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we couldn't enjoy it if it happened, because it would be so funny. It would be so funny.
It's fine for him to enjoy it inside.
Yeah.
It was a lovely couple of goals last night in the Liverpool game as well. Nice one from Firmino. Debut goal for Nat Phillips as well. Yeah. Tried to nick it off Alisson the other day, didn't he? Didn't quite get there, but he got this one. And what about the Ox's goal? That was a great finish,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, nice to really see good. Him just like, I just feel like he's constantly coming back from an injury or playing his way back into the team. And it's just, yeah, just nice to see him. Nice to see him on the score sheet and on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Burnley were just hard to play against again, though, for Liverpool. The scoreline doesn't really reflect how well they played, particularly in the first half, I think. Chris Wood is such a pest.
He is. Just an absolute menace, isn't he?
Yeah, he had that chance, didn't he, at 0-0. Mm. And I think what Liverpool did really well in this is they didn't panic when it was hard, because that's the most important thing. They knew their quality would get there in the end, and they seemed to know that at least. But I think that's it. Nerve with Liverpool. It's never talent, and it's never been talent at any point this season. I mean, obviously we've talked about the injuries, but a lot of the performances, particularly in 2021, could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
But now, sort of a little bit like just what Dortmund have just done in the Bundesliga, actually. They dug themselves a hole where they looked like it was getting impossible to the top four. And when they got to this point where, like, right, you have to win everything from now on, they're like, oh, okay, that makes it straightforward. Let's just do that. And they've managed to motor on and do that. And I do think they'll beat Palace on the final day of the season and get there.
Yeah, they probably will too.
Leicester need to better Liverpool's result in order to get into the Champions League places now because of Liverpool's better goal difference.
I mean, that is the thing. I mean, I know you're all very pleased for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, but I was kind of cursing that goal, because if Liverpool had won 1-0, there would have been a much more interesting thing on the final day of the season, because you could have had like Leicester like going to town on Tottenham and it being more of a goal difference battle. But with Liverpool 4 in front, that's not really going to happen now, is it?
Yeah.
Well, you're hoping for like couple of sendings off for Spurs, which, you know, might happen. They might
lose.
You're
always hoping for that anyway.
Last day of the season, they did that against Newcastle that time, didn't they? You never know.
And also, we all remember what happened with Christian Bull.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Crystal Palace.
There's a lot of narrative going on.
They could really surprise Liverpool.
When you're talking about last day of the season Premier League classics, I always go back to, I'm really sorry Marcus isn't here for this, always go back to Sven's Manchester City losing 8-1 at Middlesbrough.
Yeah, that was amazing.
A classic of its genre.
Also, Alex Ferguson's last ever game being a 5-all draw with West Brom.
Yeah.
Like, what happened there?
Last day of the season is always absolutely nuts. Yeah. And it made, so I think I was, other than Liverpool fans, I was like super stressed watching the Liverpool game last night, because I had Mo Salah as my captain. And if anyone has been following the Football Ramble Fantasy Premier League.
Tell us about your own title race, Jules.
Oh my God, this is the best title race that we've seen all season. Forget La Liga, Andy. this is going to the final day between me and Lars. I think there are 8 points between us. I needed Mo Salah to do something last night, because I captained him and Lars hadn't captained him. So if he'd even got a dodgy assist like Bruno did the night before, I'd be a good 20 points ahead going into the final day. But now it's 8 points and I'm sweating, I'm not going to lie. It could go either way. Whew.
I'm just happy that there's something happening on the final day, both in the actual Premier League and the Fantasy Premier League. Just like
absolutely,
that something's going to the wire.
As long as we're clear, Jim, which is the most important one?
Oh, the FPL.
Obviously.
It's been more
important. And you better be rooting for me, boys.
Of course.
Yeah, we're not scared of Lars, so yeah, we're rooting for you.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other games last night, including Tottenham, who their fans had an unwelcome return back to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But before that, just to remind you of some other good stuff you can listen to, it's this season's final episode of Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy. And it's out now. She looks back over some of the biggest stories that they've covered across a season that won't be remembered for many goals or games, but actually the strides that have been taken off the field. She speaks to previous guests to update us on the state of head injury protocols, meaningful campaigns to stop social media abuse, and also how policing of fans will change given the recent protests too. You can listen to that now. Just search Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy in your podcast app.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week at Sukarnov.
If you're wondering how Ashwood City Football Club dealt with the news of the European Super League, then binge the award-winning mockumentary The Offensive this summer.
I think a few of the players are considering taking to social media.
No, fucking no. OK, turn off the fucking Wi-Fi for all I care. Tear down the 4G mast.
Patrick, you've got a Zoom call with the other 14 right now.
The 14? What?
The remaining Premier League clubs.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I don't want to talk to those fucking losers.
Or if you'd rather get stuck into a comedy film podcast, why not check out Clash of the Titles? The podcast where two films with something in common go head-to-head to decide which one is better. Their latest episode saw Red Heat up against Tango and Cash.
In both films, I think someone says, where did you learn to drive like that? Which no one ever says in real life. Oh, I had lessons. But a nice callback.
And your nan evolved that, are you? How many times did you take to pass? You passed first time, what about your written test?
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
I read something, some quote from the worst manager in the history of the Premier League, Frank de Boer, 7 matches, 7 defeats, 0 goals, where he was saying that it's not good for Marcus Rashford to have a coach like me. If he was coached by Frank, he would learn how to lose. Because he lost every game.
I think I miss him already. How long's it been?
Months? I don't know.
It's not been that long since he got sacked from Spurs, and I miss him already, I think.
I once had a Jose Mourinho soundboard that Marca produced ahead of a Classico of all his
best quotes.
Yeah. Like, obviously in Spanish.
Must have been
but they were excellent.
How do you say football heritage in Spanish? Because that's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I think Jose at Roma is going to be great.
Oh,
it's
me too.
It's going to be a lot of fun to be
me
had there.
Too.
I mean, there's still this banner at the San Siro.
Italy,
there's still this banner when Inter play at the San Siro. There's one celebrating him, and there's one that simply says zero tituli, which means zero titles, which is what he said about Ranieri.
Brilliant.
Wow.
And it's still celebrated 11 years on.
Amazing. It's George, Jim and Andy here with you on this Thursday's Ramble. Now it's time for this. You know if you got an email to show at footballround.com, do it for Sven. I said you got an email to show at footballround.com, Sven. Bryn Morgan, one of my favourites, that one. Perfect good. Thursday vibes, I think.
Very enjoyable. James Reed in Melbourne has been in touch. He says, Pete mentioning the Pokes yesterday gave me a brief moment to think about my own underwhelming playing days. My one useful skill was being incredibly accurate with a toe poke. At free kicks around the attacking area, I would stand near the usual taker, and despite being rubbish at free kicks, if the opposition didn't set up their wall quite right, I would laser it into the bottom corner with a toe poke. With a short back lift and speed off the boot, it would be in the net before the opposition knew anything about it. It was good for a goal every now and then until we had to face the same teams in the reverse fixtures, and they were all aware of that fucking toey bloke. So a combination of that and maybe unsurprisingly fracturing my big toe several times finished off my usefulness and playing career. Yeah, the toe punts. Dangerous, isn't it?
I mean, you do have to say fucking toey bloke in an Australian accent. Yeah.
Fucking toey bloke.
Exactly.
It's the only way I've ever got, you know, so on the pier in Brighton, you know, when you've got those like funfair things and there's the ones where you put the ball in the hole.
Yes.
So it's the only way I've ever got the ball in the hole is by toe poking it in.
Really?
You can't side foot that, can you?
No.
You've got to toe poke it. And I'm terrible, by the way, at that. You can imagine, can't you, Andy? You're like,
I'm trying to think how I'd approach the game.
With a toe poke.
In a similarly incompetent way, I imagine. Yeah.
I'm surprised you don't see footballers punting it more. It's not that they don't do it. It's a bit of a myth that they never do it. But it is so effective.
Yeah, get a lot of power out of those toes.
But they were right yesterday, the guys. It was not just that when Ronaldinho did it at Stamford Bridge, it became acceptable to do it.
Mm.
It was acceptable to do it already. It was acceptable to say it.
Yeah.
I think after Ronaldinho did it at the bridge, I think that was the difference. We've got one from David Odie here. It says, thinking about results from the last couple of months, and it struck me that Newcastle, Brucey's boys, have had a nice old go at sticking their boot into the race for the top four. I now live in Australia and follow AFL here. I was watching some AFL yesterday. And towards the end
what
of the regular season...
What football don't you watch, Andy?
Well, just for a little break.
How do you have time?
Yeah, you told us what you watched earlier. It was like the French Cup final, the last day of the Portuguese League. There was another Cup final in
Italian
there. Italian Cup final.
Probably a bit of non-league
all the Premier League
there,
games.
AFL.
How have you got some AFL in there?
Got eyes everywhere.
I was crying at midnight. anyway, towards the end of the regular season in AFL, David says, you get games referred to as eight shapers. These are games which influence who will finish in the top eight and therefore play in the final series. It is often used to refer to teams involved in games who will not be able to finish in the eight, but who will affect who does. So think mid-table mediocrity in April. Newcastle in recent months have beaten West Ham, my team. Leicester, drawn with Liverpool, and were some way to going to do the same against Manchester City before they obviously got the message that City had indeed already won the league, so stop bothering to win the game.
Eight shapers, that's great.
Eight shapers.
Very Aussie.
Yeah, I've not heard of that before. We get a lot of Aussie emails, don't we?
We do. It's all a great nation with a wonderful interpretation of the language.
With lots of fantastic football stories. Yes. Keep your emails coming in, guys. show@footballramble.com. Or don't forget, you can also tweet us @footballramble. All right, on to some more of last night's games. Let me just wrap up a few of the scores. Everton beat Wolves 1-0, which means they've still got a chance of European football. Newcastle beat Sheffield United 1-0 at home as well in front of their fans. And Tottenham lost at home last night against Aston Villa by 2-1. This was not a welcome return for the Spurs fans, Jim, and you are loving it.
Yeah, I feel like I don't want to be too smug about this because I imagine the same thing could well happen on Sunday at the Emirates. But I just feel like a lot's been made of Spurs fans booing the team off at half time. But I think that was more for how the season's gone than the actual performance of those.
Saving it up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there might be a little bit of that on Sunday across the league, actually, from some frustrated fans, because it's all quite emotional, isn't it? And I think it's been such a chaotic season for Tottenham. And I think the letter that Daniel Levy sent, I always get that wrong.
Same thing.
Sent around was really interesting because he referenced that they're going to look to sort of appoint an attacking manager that's more in sort of the Spurs kind of tradition and sort of, you know, they've forgotten their DNA. And like, it makes me think two things, like how toxic is Jose Mourinho that after he leaves,
he takes
a club's
the DNA.
Chairman is exactly is sending letters to the fans kind of, you know, talking about all of these things. Or is Mourinho just a useful scapegoat there? Because, you know, the European Super League the dust hasn't really settled on that yet, and like so many of the owners, like there was no apology to the fans for that. And I understand why they're frustrated. It cost those Spurs fans 60 quid for that as well.
Which is
pretty outrageous. So I think they're within their rights to register their displeasure.
Yeah, I know a Spurs fan who went last night and said that actually at the start, the atmosphere was pretty good.
Yeah.
So before the game, you know, of course, you've spent the majority of this season not being able to go and see your team play. So the excitement of getting to go back to that incredible stadium, get there and hope that you can at least end the season on a little bit of a high. There's so much speculation about Harry Kane's future, what's going to happen. So, you know, playing against Aston Villa, they probably went with a bit of hope they could get a result in this game. Still finishing in a Europa League place to end the season wouldn't be a terrible thing for Tottenham. Yeah. Obviously, they were hoping for more when, you know, they're top of the table, you know, previously this season. But still, to end it at least on a high in these final couple of games, fans back at the stadium, an all right atmosphere at the start, but very quickly that got toxic. And by the end of it, it was not pleasant at all by what I've heard.
Say that's very Arsenal over the last couple of years.
Yeah,
it's a funny thing, isn't it? And I agree, Jim. It's like a combination of things. It's not just the fact that they started the game well with that Bergwijn goal and then it all went south very quickly. Obviously, that plays into it, but it is the Super League stuff. It is the Mourinho stuff. It is the fact that, as Jim says, they're being charged 60 quid. And really, what would it have cost the club to say, you can come in for nothing after the rubbish season we've had?
Mm.
It's outrageous. And the thing is, they're all stuck at the top of the stadium as well. So they could keep these banners on the bottom advertising chocolate and saying, oh, well, you know, we love you fans. Show them you love them.
Yeah.
Don't make a banner about it. Mm. Treat them nicely. Don't say the fans are the most important things to us and then say, can we have your 60 quid and we're going to shove you at the top of the stadium so you're miles away from the pitch so you don't have to interfere with our advertising that we've got in now. It's outrageous.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And then to top all that off, Harry Kane was out on the pitch on his own at the end.
Mm.
Look, you can always read into what you think a player is doing. He was obviously applauding the Tottenham fans who had stuck around at the end of the game. Was it a goodbye? Some people were saying that could have been the last time he plays in front of the Tottenham fans.
Yeah, it could
and
well
what
be.
A sad goodbye that would be if it is, because he has been absolutely incredible for the club. And I don't think that even Spurs fans could begrudge him if he does make a move away this summer.
Yeah, it's interesting this, isn't it? Because it might even have to get ugly with the way that, you know, Spurs are very, very good at holding on to their players or certainly getting big fees for them. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the summer. But it looks, you know, when a player comes out and says they want to leave, like it only goes one way. I have to say, like, the news came through on Monday and looking at that all come through, it just... I actually felt nothing but sympathy for Tottenham fans because it set off a little kind of muscle memory of when Fabregas was obviously going to leave, or Vieira, or Henri, one of those players that is so important to your club, and it is an absolute gut punch. And yeah, it's not a pleasant thing to experience.
I do wonder with that, though. For me, this feels like it's got quite a strong Steven Gerrard to Chelsea vibes. It's not an easy deal to make by any stretch of the imagination. I think the first part of that is the fact that Kane is never going to go on strike or anything like that. It's just not going to happen with the kind of guy he is and the respect he has for the club. Secondly, you're asking for a club to spend a lot of money on a fee, even if it's reduced a little bit from what it would have been pre-COVID, signing on fee, wages, et cetera, to bring in someone key in a summer where it's like one of the most difficult summers to do it. I think it's quite a tough sell. I as you say, Spurs aren't going to give him away as well. Although, in my opinion, the most sensible thing, and I know a couple of people have said this, would be for Spurs to sell him and use the money to rebuild the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if they do sell him and they get a big fee, they need to do that. They might even do well to get two strikers so they don't have the problem they've had of not being able to find an understudy for their talisman. Mm. But I have a suspicion that a certain Manchester club, the red one, Man United.
Salford.
they might, the Glazers might sanction a massive transfer to build some bridges And I think they might overpay if they have to.
They might sanction a massive transfer for Michael Bridges. That would be a reveal.
Heard it here first.
They'd have to fly him over from Australia. Some good banter, though, from the Spurs fans last night at one point, though. They were singing that Ledley King was better than John Terry, who then turned around and held an imaginary trophy aloft. Good banter, that. Very good.
It's all they can do, I suppose.
This is all they can do. And a massive win. We do have to give credit to Aston Villa as well, beating Spurs on their home ground with their fans there. That was nice for Dean Smith and his side. And that meant that this season has actually made history because there are 13 more away wins than home wins in the Premier League, 150 to 137. And of course, with only 10 games to go, it means that this Premier League season is the first campaign in the history of England's top four tiers to see more away wins than home wins, thanks to Opta Joe for that stat that I saw on Twitter yesterday.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, we always suspected that, you know, home advantage was a big thing. Like, I don't think there's ever any doubt, but that's so kind of...
That's significant,
That's such a kind of, like, small amount either way that you can see it becomes a completely level playing field when there are no fans in. But, like, what motivation for fans to get back in and just be loud and just cheer every kick. Didn't we beat Man City? Yeah.
And I know they had 10 men, but we beat Man City.
I felt that in Everton Wolves. You got a bit of the Goodison Roar again.
100%.
Honestly, Palace fans are amazing yesterday as well.
They've been one of the key examples of that, Andy, because they've had one of their worst home campaigns ever, Everton.
Exactly.
So, yeah, amazing. Right, let's talk about something fun that's happened. Andy, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one because in Argentina, River Plate are down to bare bones in their squad that they had to have a midfielder playing goal yesterday.
Yeah, 20 positive COVID tests. Oof. So for their Copa Libertadores game against Santa Fe from Colombia, they only had 11 players, no subs. The goalkeeper, I mean, Enzo Perez was quite a player in his time, 35 now. And 35 with a hamstring injury and a midfielder, not a goalkeeper. He went in goal. They scored twice in the first 7 minutes. They won 2-1. He didn't quite get to keep his clean sheet. And he got the man of the match award at the end.
What was the goal he conceded like?
Probably. It wasn't his fault, particularly. But it was funny. The first time he had to make a catch in the first couple of minutes, this cross kind of looped up. And you thought, oh, they're giving him loads of space to catch it. And he jumped like an eagle, soared through the air and just like patted it out for a corner.
Nice.
And then he took that sort of, you know, wide-shouldered, I'm a goalkeeper.
Yeah, this is my yard.
Stance. Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Exactly.
Apparently their B team's goalkeeper was available, but they wouldn't sanction it. So yeah, the
Comma Bowl wouldn't sanction it. The other thing is, when you start in the Libertadores Cup, you do get the opportunity to name, I think, a 50-man squad or a 52-man squad. Well, yeah, you know like how in the Champions League you get a B list.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have that because in this situation, this would have been perfect. So they could bring like the young players in and all the rest of it. They chose to only register, I think, 34.
So they kind of deserve it.
Yeah, they deserve it, basically. That's why they ran out of players. But they still won. And that is, of all the amazing things that River Plate have done, winning a Copa Libertadores game with only 11 players, with no subs, with a midfielder in goal the start, not because someone got sent off.
Yeah.
That will be part of River Plate legend.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'll go down in history, won't it?
It's brilliant.
Which Arsenal player would you have in goal? Outfield player would you have in goal for Arsenal if it was a similar situation?
Given that we've only got one glorious game left of him, I'd go for David Luiz. Because he's quite tall as well. And he likes putting himself about.
I think he'd actually be all right.
What about you, Jules? And you can't say Dan Burn because he's a goal scorer now.
Fit,
that's what I was going to say. Well, there's only one answer, isn't it? We be burning, not concerning what nobody want to say. Dan Burn, baby. It's got to be Dan Burn. Six foot four. He can go in goal for us. Gangly.
Bring back Knockout. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Right, guys, guess what? We're going to end Thursday's show today with a bit of Play Your Pards Right. And today, I am playing host and I am quite excited.
Barton might have gone and Trevino did.
Why Barton?
Well, because he grabbed him by the throat.
Well, I just thought that firstly, the guy's dived.
Every time.
Oh, I love it.
So currently the standings are Andy Brassel is currently holding the lead. He has two records that need to be beaten, Jim, here.
Okay.
He has the record on his own with 7 and he also holds the joint record with me with 7 as well.
Okay. So seven is the universal number to beat.
7 is the number to beat. Jim, you're working with Andy today as a team. If you haven't heard Player Pards Right before, then where the hell have you been? But it's basically higher or lower. So, Jim, Andy, pick a number between 1 to 5 to pick the topic for today.
You choose.
2.
Number 2. Right. So that means we are doing assists.
Okay.
Okay, so number of assists, as always, we're going to start with your friend and mine, Alan Pardew. At the time of recording, he currently has 0 Premier League assists to his name, and you've now got to guess higher or lower for each player I name whether they have more or less assists than the one below. So player number 1 today is Nani.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I think Nani was quite handy. I reckon he'll have got more than 0. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I'm going to go for higher.
Yeah, let's go higher.
Higher it is.
Yes, good start.
Yeah, come on.
Nani got 43 assists
way
in the Premier League
none.
In his time. Okay.
43, did you say?
43.
43, mm-hmm. Right.
The next player is Ashley Cole.
I think Ashley Cole would have been higher than that.
You think?
You think? Because he played for
lower?
A long time, didn't he? He played a lot of seasons and he was a pretty spectacular... attacking.
You're
player.
Our Ashley Cole expert, so I'll let you take the lead on that. I'm not convinced.
No?
Higher or lower than 43 assists?
Oh, I'm not sure now. I mean, how confident are you that it'd be lower than that?
Well, I think the maximum assists he's ever going to be getting in a season is something like 4 or 5. I think.
True. Mm.
So maximum, not average.
So more than 43. All right.
Look, you're the Ashley Cole expert. I don't want to put it all on you.
I stopped paying attention after a certain point. All right, let's go lower.
Final answer?
4.
The jeopardy there, Jim.
Jeopardy.
I could feel the pain there because you never want to go against Andy Brassel.
No,
he's the king
exactly.
of the game.
The problem, you don't want Ashley Cole to let you down again.
43, you're taking a piss.
You know what? It was 31, so it's quite a bit lower as well. Yeah. Well done, Andy. Well
that
done.
That would have been us getting the £1,000 question wrong on Millionaire.
Yeah,
that would have been embarrassing, guys.
It's quite difficult for one of the lower ones, though, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. There we go. So Ashley Cole got 31 assists. Next player, Riyad Mahrez.
Higher, you think?
I think higher.
Yeah.
Correct. 45 assists. Up next, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, higher.
Higher is correct. 77 assists currently.
Ooh.
Here we go. Robin Van Persie.
Got to be lower, yeah.
Flying through them now, boys. 53 Premier League assists for RVP. Up next, David Beckham. Higher
David
or lower
Beckham
than
more
53.
Yeah, I think it'll more than 53.
I think it might be tight, but I think it'll be just higher.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Well done.
Go on, Bex.
He got 80 assists.
Yeah, just
so
a few more.
Quite a
just
bit
one
more,
or two more.
Yeah.
Touch and go.
He was quite good, wasn't he, in retrospect, thinking about it.
Turns out.
Quite sexy. up next, James Milner.
Jim, stop talking about David Beckham being sexy.
Here we go. Up next, James Milner.
So what was Beckham's number again?
80 assists.
Has James Milner got more than 80 assists? He's been playing for a long time. I reckon that might be lower, you know?
Yeah, I think so as well. Because you think he's not been a winger for a while now,
exactly.
Has he?
Exactly.
What are you going for?
Lower.
Yeah.
Never doubt
you
James Milner.
Boys.
It's a joke. Clearly they need help.
James Milner got 85 assists so far. And still more to come, you'd expect.
Yeah.
85 assists. Go on, Millie.
How far in did
we get?
What did
we get to?
So you got 2-6. 6 correct. So you're just behind. I'm quite happy about that. Thank you very much for not beating.
Top of all the leagues.
Oh, you got 6. 1 off the record, guys. Well done. Still quite a good effort. I thought you were going to go up after Ashley Cole. That was...
I mean, looking back on that, that was mad. Yeah. So thanks for talking me out of that, Andy.
Too much faith in Ashley Cole. Lovely stuff. That is all from us today. Andy, you're back tomorrow with Marcus and Luke to preview the weekend's games, the final games of this Premier League season. Hasn't it been crazy? It's been a roller coaster, but I'm sure you'll be hearing me and Jim very soon. We'll see you soon. Have a good one, guys. Cheers for listening.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.